That reading Richard did from Annie Dillard was a real wake-up call, wasn't it? I particularly like the part about the ushers issuing life preservers. It made me wonder whether I should get up here and ask you if you're ready to go whitewater rafting this morning. That's not what brought you here, of course. But what did bring you here? Most of us have answered this question before in one conversation or another. We often cite things like a sense of sanctuary from our crowded, noisy lives, social interaction, social justice work, or maybe a sense of community is the most important thing to some of us. But human motivation is a complicated thing. Sometimes the best way to bring our own motivations to the surface is to listen to a story about someone else's. As a piece of motivational testimony about religion, it's hard to beat the story of John Newton. He's the slave trader turned author and minister and hymn composer whose story I told to the children this morning. Newton had one of those textbook near-death experiences that changes everything. Unlike many who have such experiences, though, he didn't treat this feeling as a fluke. He was determined to make it grow. And he didn't do that by scouring the docks for leaky ships to take to sea in search of another perfect storm, as some of our adventuresome children seem very willing to do. No, John Newton went to church, all the way to the front of the church. We don't have a home video of what Newton was like after his transformational experience. It's pretty easy to imagine him, though, as a highly excited fellow. I picture him running into the church, grabbing the pulpit with both hands, and starting to preach up a storm. Most of us have never seen anything like that in church, certainly not in our own behavior. And I'm not saying we should. I do find it worthwhile to ask myself, though, what is the difference between John Newton and me? Newton had his transformative experience because all of his protective layers were stripped off. A storm at sea left him naked to the elements. My own life has mostly looked like the opposite of that. A thickly insulated existence. Like most people, I worked hard to insulate myself and my family from misfortune and hardship and uncertainty. As many of you know, I practiced law for a long time before entering the ministry. My operating mode as a lawyer was just a more extreme version of the insulating habits we are all trained to cultivate. As a new lawyer, I was taught never to show vulnerability because the adversary would exploit it. I thought of this as a way of operating during the day, a kind of protective clothing I wore in my job and then took off at the end of the workday. But for me to even have a chance of doing that, of course, the workday would actually have to end. And in my legal career, I tended not to let that happen. I had a cell phone in my ear on family vacations, and in many other ways, I just never really left work. Sometimes insulation can be too much of a good thing. It can make you miss what's going on. It can cause you to hit things you want to avoid and to miss things you really don't want to miss out on. On April 12, 1912, a society lady boarded a luxury liner in Southampton, England, headed for New York. She asked a crew member at the ramp, "Sir, is this ship safe?" He responded, "Madam, God himself could not sink this ship." The captain was heavily insulated from the possibility of disaster by all of the hype and grandeur surrounding his new ship. Ignoring one warning after another, he took hundreds of passengers to a watery grave. I first began to wonder about the insulated quality of my life about 7 years ago, sitting in my home UU church in Oakland, California. Susan Starr, a church member and friend of mine, was acting as guest worship leader. She reflected on her own life crisis over alcoholism and what she had missed, what the addiction had cost her. She described the two worlds between which she saw herself moving, AA and her church. She mused that she seemed to get her social psychology at the church and her religion at AA. Susan wondered what the difference might be between the people around her at AA and the people around her at church. She said, "I think the difference is that the people at AA know that their very lives are at stake." And then with remarkable kindness, she said, "When that sense of urgency becomes present in this sanctuary, you will be amazed at what will happen." Recently, I was leaving Parker House just before the local AA meeting that uses our space. A few people had already arrived for that meeting, and we stood there shooting a breeze for a few minutes. I told them about the AA story I'd heard in my home church and what a lasting impression it made on me. One of them smiled and said, "There's an old saying in AA that people go to church because they don't want to go to hell. And alcoholics go to AA because they've been there. Sometimes the only way to get religion is to go to hell. Funny thing. But what a costly, dangerous conversion." When I heard that AA story in Oakland, I had been getting more active in my home church. The story gave me a strong, intuitive hunch about what was propelling me in that direction. It lay underneath all the conscious reasons I gave about friendships, a sense of community, social justice work, a need for sanctuary from my crowded, noisy life. And in retrospect, the hunch was right. I was stepping further and further into the church out of a growing sense of urgency about my life. I saw it going on by. Saw myself missing an undefined something that felt very important. And I saw the possibility of finding something in church that would enable me to transform my life without having a near-death experience. I was just starting to see how I had used my career to build an over-insulated life, insulated particularly from the kind of vulnerability that goes hand in hand with intimacy. But I was still cruising along in my successful, unsinkable career, still missing things. I didn't see the iceberg. After 30 years of marriage that included raising two children, my wife walked in one day and said, "I'm getting a divorce." A huge gash below the waterline, right out of the blue. Except, of course, it really wasn't out of the blue. Looking back later, I could see that this calamity was sitting there for a long time, hidden beneath all the insulation. My divorce was very painful, but certainly not a near-death experience. Circumstantially, my story is very different from John Newton's, which I came across not long after I heard that AA story in the Oakland church. When I look beneath the surface, though, I see clearly that I was drawn to church for the same reason he was: the possibility of a closer connection with the holy, of moving toward wholeness with transformative results. How's the insulation in your life? In some places, at least, might it be too much of a good thing? And let me pose again the question with which I began. What brings you here? Please peer inside your coat, or however many coats you may be wearing, and consider it. I can't say for sure what brings you here, but I have a strong intuitive hunch about it, based on my own experience and based on our common humanity. The only way to find out for sure is to try it, to pursue the transformative possibilities and see what happens. John Newton's story points us toward what pursuing the transformative possibilities means. It means peeling away the insulating layers in our lives. Newton didn't need to worry about that. The storm took care of it for him. Susan Starr and her AA friends didn't need to worry about it either. The addiction took care of that for them. Lacking the denuding effects of a crisis, though, we have to take off our own coats. I believe the best way to begin to do that is by listening to the stories of others and telling stories of our own in return. Stories enable us to begin where we find ourselves, regardless of how experienced or inexperienced we are, which is pretty fortunate since it's impossible to make a real beginning anywhere other than where you are. As odd as it may sound, a story about a storm at sea sometimes is more powerful than the storm itself. Sometimes a story that sounds unsensational on the surface can be powerful that way too. The power of stories does not come from sensational facts. It comes from the ordinary and yet amazing fact that a human being is revealing himself to another. It also comes from the fact that the other human being is revealing himself too, by listening with respect and vulnerability, by allowing himself to be affected. I was affected by the story of John Newton. If a major league wretch like Newton could be transformed, surely there was hope for a minor league wretch like me. I was affected by Susan Starr's story too. I realized that if Susan, who I knew to be very smart, could confess that she had been missing something really important in life, I'd better take a hard look at what I might be missing. And I was affected even more deeply by the subtext of Susan's story, which came down to this one sentence. Take me as I am, and grant me the privilege of taking you as you are. Telling others how it really is with you and listening to how it really is with them opens up transformative possibilities. If you go deeply into this, you may never be the same again. And the story Richard shared with you this morning, which he told me at greater length in conversation over a period of days, also made a powerful impression on me. Not so much about the circumstances he described, interesting as they are to me. We left out some of the ones about the German bomber that crash-landed in Richard's neighborhood during the war. There was a lot of interesting background and history there. But what really made the impression on me was what the story gave me about Richard. It is a picture of someone who believes that religion ought to make sense. It reveals a conviction that spirituality ought to have something to do with the way a person lives his life. In Richard's case, right down to the finer points of aeronautical engineering, rather than being a thing apart. I hear in this story the voice of someone who believes spiritual meaning is found in relationships, not in isolation. I hear his readiness to take his coat off around other people. Those of us in this sanctuary in particular. For the sake of uncovering a deeper understanding of who he really is and who his neighbors really are. Richard's narrative is another take me as I am story, told by someone whose experiences have shown him the importance of asking that of other people and of granting it when they ask it of him. It is a story that makes me ready to wade into the water with the storyteller, even to climb into an open boat with him, push off from the dock, and go searching for whatever transformative experiences may lie waiting in deeper waters. And it makes me eager to hear the many other such stories sitting here in our midst yet to be told. Now, at least one person sitting here is thinking, transformative is a pretty big word. And this kind of storytelling is not at all like spinning yarns around a campfire. Looks like work. Looks like there might be pain involved, and the risk of being rejected or feeling foolish. I think I'd like to see the goods before I make that kind of investment, this person might be thinking. The kind of relating I'm talking about is risky. You will not get your money back if you are less than completely satisfied. And no, you can't look at the goods before you invest yourself in a venture like this. Why? Because you are the goods. If your venture is successful, you won't be the same you that wants to check out the goods. If you could check them out before embarking, it wouldn't be transformative. They might be interesting or appealing, but in the end, ordinary, not transformative. I believe there are only two causes working together that can move anyone to embark on such a venture. The first is getting an intuitive sense, a hunch, that something urgent is at stake in his successful, well-insulated life. It might be the negative urgency of sensing that you are in danger of running into something you ought to avoid. Or it might be the positive urgency of sensing that you are missing something you'd really like to land on. The only way to cultivate that hunch is to listen to the stories of others who have taken this voyage, and then exercise your imagination. Ask yourself whether the experience that is possible in church might be powerful enough to bring you to something transformative. I've made a large bet that it is. Annie Dillard thinks it's so powerful you might get inspired to take on challenges big enough to scare you. The biggest risk in such a venture might not be that it would fail, but rather that it would succeed, giving you a lot to live up to, a larger life. As Annie Dillard says, when you come to church, put on your life jacket. The second cause is finding the right crew to join up with, because you can't do this alone. That means people who trust one another and share a sense of where the venture is headed. We can see this church as an open boat in which to find out what the deeper spiritual waters hold for us. I wouldn't row such a boat with just anybody, but I would get right in and push off from the dock with Richard and with all of you. In a sense, I already have. So, the state of spiritual emergency that I am inviting you to declare is an urgent, shared intention on the part of all of us to emerge, to step out into the light, to reveal the person living underneath the protective coatings, to move closer to each other, and in so doing, as they sang on the deck of the sinking Titanic, "Nearer, my God, to thee. Nearer to the holy, to wholeness, nearer to being transformed." In most places in life, it would take a miracle or a catastrophe to have this hoped-for emergence. In church, it can be brought within our reach with just three ordinary-sounding miracles: that we trust one another, that we reveal ourselves to one another, and that we see and accept one another for the truth we are. When we make this declaration and do these things, we will be amazed at what will happen. Amen, and may it be so.